It's a film with three brains. 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 It's a film with three brains.
Oh my god, you guys are freaks.
Welcome to the film with three brains. I'm Cohen in Maplewood, New Jersey.
I am Sean in Chicago.
And I am Sam in Monotonia, California.
And the movie we'll be discussing today is the 80s classic Roadhouse, starring Patrick Swayze, directed by a fellow named Rowdy Harrington, who didn't direct much else of note, but he did direct this, and it's a personal favorite, despite its flaws, of which there are many. Indeed, there are. I mean, honestly, it's a terrible, terrible movie, but I love it. You know, it's definitely a guilty pleasure. So I guess my first question for myself as well, which I know the answer to, is: do you guys remember seeing this in the theater? Did you see it in the theater? I know it was rated R, and it was out. It came out in 1989, so we would have been what, freshmen in high school, maybe sophomores.
Yeah,
too young to see R-rated movies without sneaking in, which we did a fair amount of anyway.
You did.
I don't remember seeing it at all in the theater. I don't remember really seeing it for the first time until much later, probably college.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I probably saw it before that, just because I used to watch a lot of movies, and this was right in the middle of Patrick Swayze's sort of heyday, sandwiched I think between Dirty Dancing and Ghost, probably, along with a fair number of other terrible action movies. He went through a phase there. Well, yeah, I don't remember seeing it in the theater. I don't know if I did or not, but I've seen it a zillion times since, I can assure you.
Why have you seen this a zillion times?
Why have I seen it a zillion times?
Yeah,
because it's awesome. Because I love every terrible minute of it. It's just terrible.
Well, that's what's interesting about this movie. It has a cult following, and it's one of those things because it's so bad, it's good.
I mean, the basic premise is bananas. A superhero-esque bouncer goes to a southern town and cleans it up, you know, defeats the bad guy. I mean, it's like, it's like a Western, basically. But
right.
Chris.
No, to me, I think this movie sums up the plot of, like, almost every, like, Knight Rider or Hulk or any of these TV shows from the 80s where that's what it was. The guy who, you know, the next episode of Roadhouse is that he drives 100 miles away and does the same thing in the next town, and we all love it again.
Exactly. Like
that's it. It goes over
it's
and over
the
and over.
Same episode over and over in a,
yep.
in a different town. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's like MacGyver or something.
Right. And I mean that's the funny thing about Roadhouse is they always keep cryptically referring to, you know, something that happened in the past, particularly been him and Sam Elliott, who plays his like elder mentor type, the mentor bouncer. I will admit that it's terrible, but it's also pretty quotable, and everyone's trying pretty hard, which I find endlessly amusing. Like no there's no real tongue in cheek. Like no one realized that they're making trash when they were shooting. They all seriously think like they're making Citizen Kane, I think. I don't know. Which just gives it so much all the more charm as a result. Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Got a car, right? I mean,
what's that?
What kind of car is he driving in there?
Well, he has a Mercedes, but he puts it in storage and buys a clunker. And fills the trunk with spare tires.
Right.
Because the very first night he comes out and finds two of his tires have been slashed. That's my dog barking.
And he gives his old car to just the dude that's near in his neighborhood or something. And he's like, here, keep it. Right.
That's when he leaves. That's for the first town. He had to go to the second.
Yeah. Right. Right.
I think that sets up the thing that this is what he does. Is he keeps his Mercedes for himself, and he goes from town to town buying a crappy car that will get beat up, and goes on to the next one.
Yeah, and he rents, you know, the quote unquote crappy apartment no one wants. That's nicer than any apartment I ever lived in Brooklyn for sure. It just happens to be across the river or pond. Actually, I actually think it's a pond or like a man-made lake from the villain of the movie. who's right there for him to see, you know, and he watches them have a party where there's a bunch of naked women, drugs and stuff going on. And he just sits there shirtless, smirking to himself about those rascally Southern villains.
This movie does kind of, is also kind of the epitome of 1980s, like topless scenes, like just gratuitous topless scenes. Sure. Like yeah. even in one of the most like the villain is trying to be as tough as forever, you know, and tough as he can possibly be inside the bar. His wife's like, "Can I dance?" And he's like, "Sure." And she takes off all her clothes to dance with no one else there.
I mean, in defense of the scene, ridiculous. I don't think it was really his wife per se.
It was perfect for teenage boys, though.
Oh, yeah, totally.
He says, "Play something with balls."
Calls him Ringo. The blind guitar player. Jeff Buckley, is that what it is? Or
close. Healy. Jeff Healy.
No, not Buckley. Jeff Healy. Of Angel Eyes. Yes.
Right.
Fame.
Yes. Yes. Oh.
So that is a 1965 Buick Riviera that Patrick Swayze gets when he moves into town with the headlights that are covered and then it flips open to reveal the lights. That's what that car is for.
Those doesn't he befriend one the auto parts store guy?
He's one of them. All the people who are being terrorized, you know, by the town heavy, who's basically a mobster, although a completely isolated individual mobster with no connections elsewhere, apparently, who has four henchmen. And once those four are defeated, that's it, you know. But yeah, so there's the guy who owns the hardware store, the guy who owns the auto shop. The guy who owns Red's the guy who owns the hardware store.
Hardware.
Yeah. Or is it an auto parts? I think it might be an auto parts store. I don't remember.
Yeah, auto parts, yeah.
Red has the best line in the whole movie when he's getting shaken down. He's in the middle of a shakedown, and Patrick Swayze comes in and after the goons leave, he says, you know, you gave them money, and he said every week, and then he asked him some silly question like, you know, does this happen a lot? And he said, does a hobby horse have a wooden dick? For some reason, I honestly always thought as a young man that was pretty much the funniest line ever uttered in a movie, and I'd say it on occasion. I can't help myself; it just slips out, you know, even at work.
The only one that comes close, I think, is Lebowski saying, does the Pope shit in the woods?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The, you know, so whatever. There's some good speechifying in this movie, I will admit. And Patrick Swayze gives some pretty good speeches in it. And that's said without irony. I actually think there's some pretty well-written, and another sort of bonkers thing about it is that he's an NYU graduate with a degree in philosophy.
Yes.
He's very well read, as we learn in a scene later when he's in the hospital getting stitched up by the pretty doctor.
Without anesthetic.
Because the second best line in it, pain don't hurt.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it was, his intelligence was supported by the fact that he carries his medical record with him at all times.
Right. Yep.
Most of us.
Yep. He's got a change of clothes in his car, you know, trunk full of spare tires. He's, you know, he's been
around. And his medical record.
Yeah.
So is his first speech the one he gives to the bouncers about be nice?
Yeah.
That's an early one for sure. I'm not sure if that's the first real speech he gives, because there is the first speech he gives is when he tells he observes for the evening how the place is run, which is terrible, of course, and ends up with lots of fighting and everything's broken, like every glass in the place is broken, every table and chair is broken, and he tells them all, you know, that there are entirely too many, you know, power drinkers and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, starting tomorrow, things are going to change. And I think then he reports for work proper and gives them that speech, the be nice speech.
Okay. Yeah, he says, I want you to be nice until it's time not to be nice.
Right.
So I actually read about this a little bit, that they use parts of this movie for police training. And even the opening scene when he's, you know, before he switches towns, where he stays super calm and just escorts the guy out the door instead of feeding or fueling the situation. He even tricks the guy. He's like, the guy's like, let's take this outside. He's like, okay, let's. And he, you know, and then the guy walks himself out the door.
Right.
And they don't let him come back in.
Right. He just turns around and walks back inside.
Yeah. And so I've heard that parts of this movie are used to help give people a sense of how not to escalate situations.
Right.
You know, so. I'm sure that was the intent of the producers. I think
if in the last episode we spoke about should this be remade, things of that nature. I think if someone took the script as is and simply updated it to take place in, you know, post-Civil War American West, didn't change a word of dialogue, it would probably work pretty well. You know, other than things like the modern technology, just remove all that, you know, the speeches he gives, you know, walking out of a saloon, instead of drawing his gun, he just turns around and walks, you know, things of that nature. I mean, it really is a bananas 80s excess Western, of which there are quite a few of, you know, both intentional and not, in that era of, you know, over the top action movies. I always think of the 80s as a time before, people who were recognized as good actors made action movies like they do now, you know, or made genre films in at all, you know, because there was a time when it was considered, you know, whatever, beneath them, slumming it, whatever you want to call it. You know, no one took Sylvester Stallone, Arnold Schwarzenegger seriously as actors. And even now, no one really takes Arnold Schwarzenegger seriously. Some people take Sylvester Stallone seriously because he's made some pretty good movies in his, you know, twilight years, playing older characters, but giving good performances. So
you're saying there's a gap between, say, Patrick Swayze and Vin Diesel.
Sure. But, I mean, Patrick Swayze, I suppose, was a little ahead of the curve, I guess you might say, because I think he was respected as an actor to a certain extent because of movies like Dirty Dancing and particularly Ghost. And then in the middle, he did shit like this, or, right, Red Dawn, Next of Kin, which is just awful. Not even fun awful, just awful.
I saw and that. Then,
Yeah, I remember. Weirdly enough, I remember seeing that in the theater. I don't remember seeing Roadhouse. I must have seen it in the theater. I can't imagine I let that go. But then, of course, culminating with Point Break, which was one of his best action movies. And then, you know, the beginning of Keanu Reeves' career, sort of the end of Patrick Swayze's, or the tail end. Because it wasn't that old, but it wasn't that much longer that he ended up dying from pancreatic cancer, I believe.
Yeah.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're forgetting about one of my favorite movies that he was in, Donnie Darko. He wasn't the lead.
I always forget he was in that.
No, I mean, he wasn't the lead. Well,
He played a teacher, didn't he? Was that a teacher in the high school?
No, the teacher was David.
Well, he is in the school.
He's the guy who's trying to teach people not to, you know, that fear is, you know, not have fear and this and that. And he's like the supposed to be the good guy, but then he gets revealed to be the pedophile.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. Why did they go into, they checked his computer or something? Why did they go? I can't remember.
Well, and unfortunately it's outside of our 1975 to 1999 window. So we're not going to review the whole thing, but I do love that movie.
But it is a good one.
So once we cover everything in that 25-year period, we can move forward.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's wrestling with this past, I think you mentioned, and he's, you know, he kind of, I think that's like part of his character, right? How he deals with his job. But if it wasn't the Civil War or something, he'd be like, oh yeah, I was in the war. I just killed
people, you know? Right. In the case of Roadhouse, it's the you know, something that happened in Memphis in his past, and it turns out that he was with some girl who was married, and the husband came after him and tried to kill him, had a gun, and he disarmed him and tore his throat out. the, you know, the old throat tearing out move, which he he revisits at the end when the bad guy's number one henchman pulls out a gun and tries to shoot him, and he disarms him and tears his goddamn throat out too, and it's wonderful.
It's pretty nice that they foreshadow that for us, and they're like, okay, well, we gotta see this.
I know. Right. And then we all do. This talk of throat ripping out, when are we gonna see it? Oh my god, it's happening.
My favorite part about that scene is how he kind of kicks him into the lake after he's ripped his throat out. Like,
it's like the weakest kick ever too. It's like he almost fell over himself. He spins and his leg hits him, and he's like, ow, ow. It's like Mr. Burns, if Mr. Burns knew karate, you know, ow. But the guy goes flying into the lake. That guy, actually, who played Jimmy, the bad guy, was later he was in Armageddon, another true guilty pleasure. A terrible, terrible movie I love watching. He's the captain of one of the two space shuttles.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Marshall Teague. He's also The Rock.
Yeah. Is he? I don't remember. Yeah. Rock.
Yeah,
do you know what he is?
A ton of movies as like not not big roles, obviously. But
and a ton of movies. Background tough guy.
Oh yeah.
Walker. I like this stranger.
What's that?
he had like earring of with something like a Indian or topaz or something. I don't know, something weird.
He did. No, you're right. He did. Yeah. For whatever reason.
Oh, just so our listeners, like, Sean, our listeners want to know when you actually saw this movie last.
Well, they would be happy to know that I saw it in the last 5 years. So
5 years?
I think I watched it last year or even early this year.
I watched it a couple of weeks ago.
I've seen it a lot.
I had this long conversation with some people I work with, who are all, you know, film buffs, and none of them had seen Roadhouse, and two or three of them were the exact same age as me. And I couldn't believe it. Like, how have you never seen Roadhouse? This is impossible. Go watch it. And they did. And I didn't hear it from three, four different people. They all really enjoyed it. And they recognize it's, you know, I mean, it's just crazy. It's so silly. It's like a cartoon, but I don't know. There's just something charming about it. There's something very watchable about it. I never get tired of watching it.
Yeah, you make a good point. He's got like four henchmen. He controls the town. He's the uncle of the love interest.
Oh, right. Yeah. Ex-husband.
Oh, he's ex-husband?
Yeah, they were married. Yes.
Oh, he's her uncle, somebody else. I can't remember.
Red is her uncle. The guy who's the thing. It's a very, very tight knit community.
Yeah.
There are 0 degrees of separation between everyone.
Right. What I love about it is one of the many things I love about it is that it's so poorly directed. Like, it's a terribly directed film, which is probably why Rowdy Harrington didn't make much else. It's so bad that in the scene where they drive monster trucks through the middle of this guy's gigantic car lot, and there's like a reverse angle of what's going on to see reactions from the people watching. You see the Double Deuce, the name of the bar, in the background.
Oh.
It's across the street, and this is like three quarters of the way or halfway through the movie. You never once got the idea that that bar is anywhere but in the sticks, you know, like the backwoods up in the mountains, in the middle of nowhere. Because every time they shoot, it's at night, and they only shoot the front. Only straight on. You never see the reverse angle ever. So you never get a sense of physical space at all. Then that scene happens. You're like, what? The bar's right there?
So you think that's a continuity mistake, or they were just like, no one will recognize it anymore?
I don't think it's a mistake. I think it's just minimal coverage when shooting, you know? And sometimes that's just because they don't have the time or budget. They're just like running and gunning. You know, their shoot schedule's short. And they don't have much of a budget, so they're just like, establishing shot, one take, let's go. and then they're interiors, you know, and, you know, maybe they may not even have a second unit who normally would go and do exteriors and things of that nature, but I don't know. Or he's just a terrible director. I mean, the other movies this guy made is actually a guilty pleasure, is called Gladiator, and not the one with Russell Crowe.
The boxing one?
Yeah, the boxing one. It's like inner city boxing, takes place in Chicago, I think, with the kid from Twin Peaks who rides the motorcycle, who no one knows, and Cuba Gooding Jr. before Academy Award ruined his life, his career anyway. It's pretty watchable too. It's got a lot of silliness about it, and a lot of, I mean, it's all testosterone top to bottom, you know.
I somewhat remember.
Speaking of testosterone, who, like, the females in Roadhouse are not well represented, really. I mean, although
that's a very diplomatic way of putting it. Yes.
Yeah,
the Me Too crowd's not going to listen to this and go out and enjoy this movie.
Probably not. I mean, I will say that the woman Kelly Lynch, who plays the doctor, she's not a damsel in distress at any point, at least. No. He never has to save her. In fact, it's more like she's the one who's trying to save him in some way, you know, like from the whole situation. She's always trying to get him to stop and blah, blah, blah. Right.
It is kind of funny how everyone is throwing themselves at him. Like the friend, the funny friend actress, I can't think of it. She's the waitress.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And who brings him the donut or whatever, and he stands up, he's totally naked.
Right.
Because that's just what people do. Yeah.
And then the scene, like, the villain's wife slash whatever, she's into him somehow. He's Dalton, you know.
Everyone loves Dalton except for I can't remember the what's his name, Brad Wesley. Except for Brad Wesley, what a intimidating name for a bag.
Yes,
Brad Wesley. He sounds like the butler in a British period piece.
You know, he showed up in, I mean, he's been in a ton of stuff, but he did show up in the Big Lebowski. The porn director.
Oh, right. That's right. And Mal, whatever he was. Yeah.
Yes.
That's, oh my God, I totally
Jackie
forgot.
Jackie Treehorn.
Yeah, yeah. I forgot he was in the Big Lebowski. And Sam Elliott.
There we go.
Yeah. Yep.
What was he credited as? The Stranger?
Narrator, I think, but maybe it's Stranger.
Yeah.
I think it's just giant mustache with cowboy hat.
Yeah, exactly. Every time I hear his voice, it's all I can picture. So to see him back in this role, I was like, that doesn't look right. Like, he looks like a normal, good-looking guy instead of, like,
yeah, he didn't look like a cowboy. Yeah, and he's in one of those Hulk movies when he plays the general dude.
Yeah, yeah.
He's shaving in that. It's weird.
Is he in the Ang Lee one?
I think he's in the Ed Norton.
Oh, is he? I thought that was... Yeah.
He's in the Yeah, he's in the 2003 one, the Ang Lee one.
Yes.
Oh, he's Ang Lee. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they switched over to William Hurt at some point.
Yeah. I think that's when they went to Ed Norton. They switched. They recast everybody. So
there you go. That's right.
And then they stuck with William Hurt through the rest of the Marvel movies, I believe. What's weird about Sam Elliott is the guy's been making movies forever, and a lot of them are great. But to me, he's always the guy in either Roadhouse or Tombstone. That's it. Oh, yeah. The guy in Roadhouse or Tombstone.
He was in Mask. He was
I know.
Chairs dude.
He was great. That movie's great. But yeah, for some reason, Roadhouse and Tombstone. Sorry, Sam Elliott. all these great movies you're in, and that's what I think of.
He was a card player in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Was he?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that movie forever.
Minor role. Yeah, that's a great one. It's old.
Is he a ne'er-do-well card player?
I don't remember.
He is in a ton of stuff. He was in a Civil War. He was in the Gettysburg movie, and he was just one of the... I mean, everyone's in that movie, too, but... But he looks, that was easy casting. It's like, oh, Sam Elliott in the Civil War. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Some captain.
I also enjoy the fact that his name in Roadhouse is
Wade Garrett. Wade
Garrett. a combination of like, who am I thinking of now? I just forgot.
You're thinking of two cowboy sheriffs. Pat Garrett.
Pat Garrett.
What's the Wade one?
Yeah, I don't remember now. Anyway, very Western-y. Send the drifter in to clean up the town. reluctantly, the reluctant hero, of course. You know, but he does it all anyway. With some great one-liners along the way.
I know what it is. Russell Crowe plays Ben Wade in the remake of 310 to Yuma.
Okay.
That's it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good call. Yeah. So, getting back to remakes and sequels, I don't know if you guys are aware, but they did make a sequel to Roadhouse called Roadhouse 2 Last Call.
Straight to DVD.
Yeah, straight to video. The guy who's in it, I'm going to say this wrong. His name is Jonathan Scheck, I want to say. And the only thing you would ever know him from is he was the douchey lead singer from That Thing You Do, that Tom Hanks movie.
Oh, yeah.
He was the singer guy in that. And then, so in Roadhouse 2, which I've seen, by the way, only once.
Nothing to be proud of.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I had to say it was inevitable. It was sort of like Escape from LA in that. Had to be okay. Anyway, he plays a DEA agent and is the son of Dalton, the Patrick Swayze character, who died off screen before the sequel ever starts within the context of the story. I don't remember how he was like shot in the back, I think they said, or something very Western sounding. And he goes to a different town in a different bar that has nothing to do with the first movie. The only tenuous connection is that he's Dalton's son, and he's referred to once. And then later, Dalton's heretofore unmentioned brother shows up, who's this guy's uncle, played by, I can't remember his name now. He's in a ton of stuff. You'd recognize him. Anyway, he's sent in undercover as a DEA agent. And there's drugs are running through this bar in like rural Kentucky, and he cleans it all up. He takes them all down, you know, and this one's got far less speeches. Nothing really terribly interesting about it. The action scenes are even blander. and the story is even more sort of simplistic and stupid.
But do people say, I thought you'd be taller?
No.
Right.
Bigger, or I think.
The bigger or taller?
It's bigger.
Yeah, it's bigger. That line shows up a few times in the movie.
Yeah.
It's cute.
Yeah. What's this? I want to look up the Jonathan Schick. Oh, Will Patton. I don't know if you recognize his name, but he was also in Armageddon, actually, as the guy who has a gambling problem and he owes money and he's a deadbeat father and whatever. He's like Bruce Willis's right hand man. Anyway, he's a much better actor than Roadhouse 2. Although Jake Busey is in Roadhouse 2. And anything with a Busey in it is automatically better. Preferably Gary Busey, but if he can't get Gary, at least his son is there to keep up the crazy.
Well, apparently we don't have anyone who will argue that statement. It must be true.
And I had to look it up, but his son's the lead's name and his character name in Roadhouse 2 is Shane Tanner. So Shane. So yeah. And the bad guy's name is Wild Bill. It's getting a little on the nose at this point, but yeah. But hey, they're trying, I suppose. Oh, it's in Louisiana, not Kentucky.
Louisiana. Oh, that one is.
Yeah.
The original is in Missouri.
Jasper. Is that Missouri? I don't remember.
Yeah,
because I remember they talk about Memphis, but that's in the past.
No, it's Jasper, Missouri.
Yeah, Jasper.
Yeah. And do we know where he starts when he gets the call? What city is that?
I think he was in New York.
It's supposed to be New York. Yeah, it had a New York look to it.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, it was.
That's how they set up. He's big time.
Yes.
Know? He's when the guy says I need the best, and he says, Wade Garrett's the best. And he says, Wade Garrett's getting old. I won't. As if these guys are like celebrities. You know?
Yes, yeah.
Celebrity bouncers. You know.
Right. And they only have two names in their Rolodex.
It's just Wade Garrett and Dalton. No first name. Dalton.
No, just Dalton.
Yeah.
So is this movie one that should be remade?
Definitely not. I feel like this movie's already been made 1,000 times. Like there's no reason to make it again and call it Roadhouse, and I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they did, although I don't think there's that big of a sort of, I don't know if there's a big enough cult following to warrant the sort of investment a studio would have to make to get it made. And then, you know, I don't know if the built-in sort of audience is there for them to make their money back easily. Maybe. I don't know. I don't think so, though.
I mean, you said it's been remade by other movies. I mean, what's the closest?
I just mean, it, you know, other movies have all the exact same sort of thing. I mean, yeah. Hey, you know, Drifter comes into town, cleans it up, you know, whatever.
Oh, okay.
The very basic premise, not unlike, like any Clint Eastwood, any of his old Westerns for the most part. You know, Outlaw Joe's Who Wails, Hang 'em High, Fistful of Dollars, all of them. Not all of them, but a lot of them.
It's kind of the exact opposite of Coyote Ugly. Which is also about cleaning up bars in a certain way.
Yes. I can't think of any other movie where a bartender or a bouncer or, you know, someone who works in a bar or even a server or a waitress or a busboy for that matter, takes on the bad guy and cleans up the town. So perhaps in that regard, Roadhouse is unique.
It's gonna catch on.
Yeah, it's a genre just waiting to happen.
It'll catch on. It's just it's a slow burn. You know, it's been since hasn't happened since 1989, but we're getting there.
Oh man, is that 30 years? It's been 30 years since this movie.
That's crazy.
Plus.
Yeah, it gets better with age, like fine wine.
Yeah.
So I found out a couple factoids. This movie was nominated for 5 Golden Raspberry Awards. Worst picture, worst actor, worst supporting actor in the form of Ben Gazzara, the bad guy. Worst director and worst screenplay.
Wow.
That's a little harsh. I would love to know what it was going up against.
Well, it didn't win. It didn't win a single one. It was only nominated for 5. Nice. So it got beat out by something worse in every category. The other thing is that the monster truck actually was a Bigfoot truck. It was Bigfoot number 7, and it was built for this film. And that scene cost $500,000 to film on it was a $15 million budget for this movie. It made 30 at the box office, and $500,000 went to driving over all those station wagons. I mean, if you notice it, that's all that guy was selling was station wagons.
That's fantastic.
So, yeah. It's also, though, it's in the official Razzie movie guide, it makes the top 100 most enjoyably bad movies ever made.
All right.
So yeah, the cult following is validated by this book.
Okay, Mr. Factoid, I got a follow up on the Razzie Award. Razzie Award for worst actor was William Shatner for Star Trek V: Final Frontier.
Warranted.
But guess one of the runners up is Patrick Swayze for Next of Kin.
For the same year?
Same year.
Yeah.
Oh, well, no, I didn't know those two came out.
He was nominated for both. It was like a double nomination. Next to Kin and Roadhouse.
Oh, wow.
I had to look that up. I didn't just know that.
There's also Ralph Macchio for Karate Kid Part 3.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Cohen, you like this one. Sylvester Stallone for both Lock Up and Tango and Cash.
Oh, that's horse shit. Come on. That movie rules. Anything with Kurt Russell is automatically 100% better for having Kurt Russell in it. If Kurt Russell had been in Roadhouse, it would have won an Oscar.
I wonder if you would felt if he had become Han Solo, would you still have felt that way?
Kurt Russell?
Yeah, he screen tested.
I think he could have pulled it off.
I think he'd have pulled it off. It wouldn't have been as good as Harrison Ford because no one would be. But I think his career path would have been vastly different because if he'd have got Han Solo, I would imagine he probably, I don't know why I think this, I have no reason to say this. I'm going to say it anyway. He probably wouldn't have been in all the John Carpenter movies, which I love. I don't know why I think that. I just feel like Han Solo would have propelled him past those sorts of roles.
Well, of course, because
he wouldn't have been Snake Plissken. He wouldn't have been in Big Trouble, Little China, and he wouldn't have been in The Thing, which would have been a true tragedy because that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, but if George Lucas would have liked him, then he would have ended up being Indiana Jones. I mean, that's where that came from.
Maybe.
I think that's a leap there.
I mean, Tom Selleck was still his first choice for Indiana Jones, even with
Harrison Ford. Oh, Tom Selleck was.
Yeah. He couldn't, but he
could. There's another career that would have changed dramatically.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah.
Wow. What could have been?
Probably still licking his wounds over that one. That's a tough one to lose. Him and Eric Stoltz are sitting in a bar somewhere going, fuck. He's going, Michael J. Fox could kiss my ass. He's like, God, stupid Harrison Ford. Fuck you. Oh.
All right.
All right, no, go ahead.
I was going to give you the last little factoids.
Let's hear it.
Patrick Swayze wrote one song and sang two on the soundtrack. So
really?
Yeah. Do you remember Patrick Swayze's one song?
Yeah, yeah. He had the
top 40.
She's Like the Wind.
She's Like the Wind, you right.
Bet. Yep.
That wasn't it. From Roadhouse, though. Wasn't that from...
No, it's not in the movie. But I didn't... Yeah, but he sang... Yeah, so
I think he's... I wonder if he sang the song over the end credits.
Oh,
that for
he did.
Is that it? Yeah, I vaguely recall that. Because I never watched the credits.
I don't think.
I watched the whole credits. I was hoping there was an extra scene at the end that no one knew about, so I watched the whole thing through. I was like, I just need a little bit more, like one last like knuckle crack.
I don't remember the last shot. I mean, he goes into the house and the stuffed bear falls on the guy in the suspenders. And
the
then,
last shot is in the bar, and it's the band playing, and the camera pulls out. The credits start rolling. While we're in the bar and the band just keeps playing and people are dancing and shit. And I don't even think you see Patrick Swayze.
Oh, wait, wasn't there, there's a scene though. Is that, I just watched the movie 3 days ago and I can't even remember now, but I thought there's also a scene of them swimming in the pond, him and
yeah.
Kelly Lynch. And then
I think there is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like how their romantic scene, he flips on the radio and just happens to hit the beginning of a song.
right. It's the song has been on for exactly 3 seconds and he tunes to it. I wish I could remember what song it was.
Yeah, it's some oldie.
Well, he first puts on a rock song and she shakes her head no, oh, and he changes the station and right. gets the...
And it
sounds very much like it might, you know, like it's not the Isley Brothers because that's Ghost, but it's very much the same time period type of song.
Absolutely. We're gonna have to have a follow-up podcast when we just answer all these questions that we have researched. from episode 3.
I would also like to mention that the 80s are unique in that every action hero had the same sort of long hair kind of mulletish thing going on, a little feathered on the top and sides and long in the back. And Patrick Swayze rocked it pretty good. Kurt Russell, you know, really nailed it as well. Particularly Tango and Cash, where it's pretty big. There's a lot of hairspray in that do. And of course, Sylvester Stallone and Rambo and whatever else, but you don't see a lot of that anymore.
No,
but that's why Die Hard was such a such a groundbreaking movie because Bruce Willis did not have that hair.
Bruce Willis didn't have any hair.
No.
He had hair then, I think.
He had a little. There's a little.
Widow's
Peak. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why Die Hard is unique, interesting, and
yes.
good.
Yes. Seriously.
We're going to have to draw straws for who does that movie. I don't know if we can
I know.
Yeah.
Die Hard came out in 88, same year as Twins.
Yes.
Yikes.
Good year for movies.
Good and terrible.
Good and terrible.
Well, Sean, what's your next pick for movie?
My next pick?
No, the next movie.
Well, the next movie is The Princess Bride.
Yeah, so what movie was that? I mean, what movie was that? What year was that? Oh, that was 1987. So we're in a pretty narrow range right here. Apparently, of all the movies we can remember from the 1980s, they all came out within about an 18-month period. The end of 1987 to the beginning of 1989.
That were formidable years for us. We would have been eighth grade, about to going into high school.
Right.
Yeah.
There wasn't much else to do in rural Wisconsin besides see movies and go bowling.
Yeah, and we were terrible bowling.
We didn't have our driver's license until the latter part of this, so of course the first couple of years. Yeah.
Well, having older siblings drive was good.
Spaceballs is around 1988,
1989. Are you asking or so telling us?
Yeah.
It's
1987. Yeah.
Seven.
Yeah. Summer of 1987.
Nice. I did not see that in the theater, but I poked my head in and then watched it incessantly when it was on video.
I definitely saw it in the theater.
Just to refresh my memory, I was curious about films from 1988.
Sorry.
There's some good ones.
That's Zeppelin barking. He wants to be part of the podcast.
So, do we answer that question? What was it?
What was the question?
It was your. It had to be your bull.
When did you get a cat?
We have two cats. That one.
Oh, that's right. They're
hungry.
For some reason, when I heard the dog bark and then a cat, I assumed it was in the same household. Yeah. Which is silly.
All right, what more about Roadhouse?
I don't know. What else could you say?
We always answer a couple of the same questions. What age do you have to be to watch this movie?
I would say it's rated R for good reason, I think. I mean, it is pretty stinking violent. And there is some nudity, not that I think nudity is such a big deal, but there's some, there's some stone cold murdering going on. Some throats being ripped out. So I think, an adult age is probably best. Although I'm sure I saw it. Well, I still can't remember when I saw it. I don't know. But I don't think children are appropriate.
You should be old enough to get into a bar to watch this movie.
Right. Sure.
You think so?
Well, I
would say 16 years old. I mean, if we're watching Commando in this, Commando was 1985, and I know none of us probably went to the theater to see it, but we were watching that movie on VHS by that time. Like I wouldn't want my 12-year-old to watch it, but because I don't have a 12-year-old, so it'd be really weird if he was trying to watch anything. I have to think, I'm not really your father. and you shouldn't watch this movie. But 16, I think, is totally reasonable. I mean, just based on what a 16-year-old can see these days.
I don't know
why a 16-year-old would want to watch this movie, though. To me, it'd be like, I would love to see a group of 16-year-olds watch this movie and to watch their faces and be like, what in the world is, like, what world is, like.
I think they would be too befuddled to even hate it. It would be, to them, it'd be like watching a film in a foreign language. Like,
without what? Subtitles.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what is this garbage?
And why does, why does everyone throw bottles at the band so
What did they ever do?
That was the real thing, the real proof that Dalton was succeeding, though, is they took down that net that was up the first half of the movie. The second half of the movie, the net's down. Chicken
wire, so everything's good.
Yep.
Chicken wire. Gone. Sorry, that's Hamilton, the cat.
All right, so next time, The Princess Bride.
The Princess Bride. By S. Morris.
All right. Our fan base wants to know, are you actually going to watch the movie again before we review it, or are you going to go in cold like usual?
Like usual. I did actually watch this a couple days ago, but just I've seen it, so I can quote the entire movie. I really can. And so it's more like, you know, when those things you just have on the background and you're barely watching it anyway.
Right. I would like to watch it again. I don't know if I will. I want to, but I mean, I get, like, I've also seen it so many times that I feel like I could recite 90% of it with some degree of accuracy.
For bonus points, I would suggest checking out the Andre the Giant documentary.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome.
Oh, now that I haven't watched. I heard about it. It's just called Andre, right?
Yeah, I think so. Or the Giant.
Well, that's kind of
is like that. The same are you talking about the HBO thing?
I think so.
Yeah, there's one called Andre the Giant.
Is it Andre and the Giant Peach?
Oh my God! That was awful. I pulled a muscle. My groan was so intense.
Yeah, oh, maybe it's.
We're gonna have, now. I feel like we're gonna have to devote an entire episode to bad puns.
There's no such thing as a bad movies. Pun. All puns are good puns.
Yeah, all of them. All right.
But yeah, it's good because it talks specifically about him making the movie and really Crystal is in it and talking about how great he is and that sort of thing.
Hmm. Interesting.
All right, I'll watch it.
Yeah, do it.
You sold me.
I don't watch anything. You guys should watch extra stuff.
Yeah. I'm glad we came out of a review for Roadhouse knowing that we should watch a documentary on Andre the Giant.
Run this thing like clockwork.
All right.
All right. On that note, I'm signing off.
All right. We'll see you guys next time.
See you later.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. It's the film with your brains.